I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views. On this edition of Parallax Views, we've seen a week of protest since the police killing of George Floyd. Yes, rage has captured the heart of many within the United States, and we're going to be talking about the protests on this edition of the show with Tiffany Billions, an activist from the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Texas. Now, you may recall Tiffany from an earlier episode in which we covered the police killings of Botham John and Tatiana Jefferson. She joins us on this edition of the show to give us an update on what's been happening in the Dallas-Fort Worth area since her last appearance, as well as to discuss the specific protests occurring in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Not only that, though, but we also discuss her thoughts and feelings in regards to these protests as a nationwide phenomena. So, without further ado, our conversation with Tiffany Billions, a tireless activist against police brutality and corruption that I highly recommend you follow. But first, a word from our sponsor.
My name is Joseph L. Flatley, and I'm a journalist who specializes in conspiracy theories and French culture. Over the years, I've met cultists and occultists, flat earthers, and doomsday bunker salesmen, to name only a few. One thing I hear often is that the end of the world is near, and these days, you have to wonder if there might be some truth to that. My new podcast is called Failed State Update. Through interviews and original reporting, each episode asks the question, is the world ending, or does it just seem like it is? Think of it as fresh air for the Orwellian dystopia we've suddenly found ourselves in. Available now on iTunes, Spotify, Anchor, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Parallax Views. Tiffany Billions, activist and truth teller. You've been exposing corruption when it comes to the police in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex area, and I wanted to have you back on the show in light of recent events, the recent wave of protests that have gone nationwide in response to the police killing of George Floyd. How are you doing, Tiffany?
Thank you so much for having me back, and I definitely enjoy being on the show. I'm hanging in here. I'm hanging in here in Dallas, Texas, and actually the Metroplex, Fort Worth as well. Just hanging in here and moving forward with exposing all of the corruption, and hopefully that will, you know, bring equal balance to this judicial system that we have.
Now, when the news of George Floyd's, I'm just going to call it what it is. I think it was a straight up murder by cop. When that news first broke, did you immediately recognize that this would become nationwide and that it would even become a thing in Dallas, the protests, that is?
I did. I recognized I saw the video. I saw the live video about 20 minutes after it occurred. The murder occurred with George Floyd. And when I saw the video, I immediately knew that this would be a turning point, simply because it was a live murder, just like what happened with Eric Garner. It was a live murder. It was captured. The emotion of George Floyd was captured, and also the emotion of the bystanders pleading and begging, you know, for George to be able to breathe, pleading and begging for his life. And of course, George Floyd was begging for his life as well. So I definitely knew that a match had been struck and that it would definitely ignite and light a flame. There was no question.
Do you think that the anger has sort of been building for a long time now, and that this, maybe in conjunction with a few of the other recent cases, I believe there was, and I don't want to mispronounce his name, Ahmed Arbery, and also Christian Cooper at Central Park with that wild white woman who, you know, apparently wanted to get him shot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think this has been brewing, but it hasn't been brewing. You know, people would like to say, hey, you know, since social media has become a thing, this thing has been brewing. It's been brewing since before social media. The only difference here, or the only variance that we see now, is that social media has allowed a lot of the racism, a lot of police brutality and murder to be exposed. And so now we're seeing more of it. But that does not mean that it's occurring more frequently. It just means that it's being exposed. So America as a whole has been dealing with this particular type of rage against African-American citizens since its inception. And I'm grateful for social media. I'm grateful that, you know, for people who are not afraid to film, you know, when cops attempt to intimidate them and tell them to step back or tell them to stop filming. It's all, you know, it's all in the plan of you know, freedom. And so I'm grateful for social media. And I do think that I truly believe that, you know, what happened with George Floyd was straight out murder. There's no other way to see it other than murder.
I just wanted to add, in regards to the point you made, this is not a new phenomena. It's not that these incidents are increasing. This has been something that I think communities in the U.S. have been dealing with for a long time, especially the Black community. I mean,
arguably since 1492.
Well,
Since the inception.
The right. Bottom line of it is that this has been happening for decades, this police brutality. And I think people really need to understand that.
Right, right. And so for people who, because there are people in, you know, in society who really had no clue. They had no clue. They thought that, you know, African-Americans and Latino Americans were simply exaggerating when they talked about police brutality. You know, and I've, you know, I've read social media posts where people are saying, oh, you guys are just complaining, you know, and they want to sweep it under the rug. But this is a real thing. This particular occurrence with George Floyd has affected and impacted the hearts of so many people that, you know, there was no way that even, you know, someone who had no idea they would be protesting, because I believe that there are some people in the streets that are protesting that had no idea, had not an inkling that this would have such an effect on them, that it would drive them into the streets to say, hey, this is wrong, and to stop it now. And I think that's the amazing thing about Americans and about people, you know, in general, is that we, you know, we genuinely, you know, at the heart of everything, we genuinely care about one another. And I think that's what we're seeing right now.
One other thing I wanted to mention before we get into the protests themselves, I haven't been hearing it as much the past day or so, but I remember when the news first broke and tensions were starting to really heat up and the protests were starting, people were saying, oh, but all lives matter. And I flipped out at someone and I said, you know, no one, I don't think there is a person in America, Black, white, brown, yellow, I don't care what color your skin is. I think mm-hmm. everyone agrees that, yeah, lives do matter. The problem right. is that apparently for a number of Americans, especially with regards to policing, black lives don't seem to matter. So that's why we have to say black lives matter. We have to reiterate that because apparently there's a lot of people that haven't got that through their skulls yet.
Absolutely. I'm in total agreement with you. Here's the thing. You know, I have no issue with saying all lives matter. I can say all lives matter because they do. Your life matters. My next door neighbor's life matters. My life matters. Everyone's life matters. But if a person, an individual cannot say black lives matter, then I take issue with that because I can say white lives matter. I can say black lives matter. I can say Hispanic lives matter. I can say Chinese lives matter. But when an individual refuses to say black lives matter, they're already showing their allegiance. And that's where the problem, that becomes an issue.
Now, how did the protests come about in the Dallas area? I know there was a lot of weird misinformation coming out claiming that the cops were behind some of these protests. Maybe they were. I don't really know, but there was a lot of conflicting reports coming out initially.
In fairness, agents provocateurs from the police are not exactly a new phenomenon. So,
yeah, you're right. You're right. So on Thursday, there was a rally downtown in front of Dallas Police Department headquarters. I was a part of that rally. Myself, along with another individual, Rakim Balagoon, we spoke at that rally and we basically informed and educated the people. At that time, there, you know, no charges had been brought against Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd. At that time, a couple of hours before that, the FBI had released information and made a statement stating that they didn't have sufficient evidence to go forward with the charge. And so this was very disheartening for a lot of the people that attended the rally. And so that caused us to push forward to Friday. Friday, there was a planned protest. Now, I did not attend the planned protest. I attended the beginning of the protest where the speeches were going on, but when they actually spilled into the streets, that's when I decided to leave. And the reason being is that Dallas Police Department has a history of antagonizing protesters, of strategically using their horses and their cars to block protesters in and use chemical warfare. And I say chemical warfare because that's what it is when you tear gas a group of people. And so they have a history of doing that. And it does not matter if you're protesting peacefully. So at that time, you know, when they spilled into the streets, I decided to leave the protest. But I can tell you that there were a lot of things going on. A lot of people reached back out to me and contacted me and said, hey, you know, this is what they did to us. They boxed us in. They would not allow us to leave. And then they began to, you know, throw tear canisters at us. And you could actually see the strategic flow of police cars. You know, if you were watching from, I believe it was WFAA, they did an overview of the actual protest. You could see all these police cars creating a rectangle and boxing all of the protesters in. And that same thing happened yesterday on the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge here in Dallas. The FBI, the National Guard, and Dallas Police Department boxed protesters in on the bridge, you know, behind and in front, and began to mace them, began to spray let off tear gas canisters and, you know, began to shine bright lights in their face. They then made them get on their stomachs and they zip tied them and they zip tied them and they had to lay on the bridge for 3 hours before a call was made to the chief of police, Renee Hill. And she decided that she would not arrest the protesters, that she was going to let them go with a warning. And it was over 300 protesters on that bridge.
And this is the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge?
Yes.
How magnanimous of her.
Absolutely.
Now, so, have there been other incidents in Dallas since we last spoke? I know we spoke about Botham Jean and Tatiana Jefferson, both of which, you know, the story you told with those cases really haunt me to this very moment. They're very upsetting to me. I I always rage to my co-host Casey about those two cases because it's unacceptable. It's just unacceptable. Has there been any improvements made? Or, you know, I would assume not because these protests are happening now.
So that's a great question. You know, the climate in Dallas and Fort Worth, and I include Fort Worth because that's where Tatiana Jefferson was murdered in her home. The climate is very, very sensitive when it comes to relations between police officers and civilians. And since the last incident, which was the murder of Tatiana Jefferson, there haven't been any instances of outright police murder, unquestionable brutality. And so, you know, everybody here, all of the organizations here, you know, we've been pushing for change. We've been pushing for, you know, a change in the act, the compliance and the conduct, police conduct provisions. We believe that, you know, a police officer who has had three or more complaints of abuse or violence should be terminated from the force. We don't believe that your complaints should be allowed to, you should be able allowed to stockpile complaints, right? Like Derek Chauvin had over 18 complaints filed against him, and so did his partner. And so we've been pushing the city council member for a citizens review board. Renee Hill promised that, that we would have a citizens review board that held subpoena power. And she only did that to so that the people, you know, would calm down. 2 to 3 months later, we can't get her to move forward on getting this citizens review board passed. And so the tensions are still high, although there haven't been any direct instances of violence here in Dallas-Fort Worth.
What is going on with the, you know, I've seen the town halls after Tatiana Jefferson's murder by officer murder cop Aaron Dean, and that's what I'm going to call, you know, people like Derek Chauvin, just officer murder cop, because that's right. What they're doing, it just seems like when these things are brought up at the town halls, the politicians, the DAs, these figures just give half-hearted responses.
Right. And so what you're seeing is the lackadaisical, non-caring attitude of the politicians that promised change, but once they get in there, once they're elected, they renege on everything that they promised to do. This has been a problem, an ongoing problem with Dallas, and we believe that it stems from the head of the police union, Mike Mata, who, you know, has consistently threatened to fire, you know, the chief, or he will come out on social media and he'll say, hey, it's as far as like the Botham John case. Hey, he didn't like the fact that Amber Geiger was arrested. He wanted Chief Hall removed because she arrested Amber Geiger, albeit it took her almost a week to do so.
Casey, do you have anything you'd like to ask Tiffany at this point?
I mean, honestly, not really off the top of my head. I did look up earlier, since you had mentioned there have been no police-related deaths since that incident, but because I thought I heard news out of somewhere in Texas, and then I found out it was in Austin, Texas, where a less-than-lethal round and killed a protester. What on Sunday? Yeah. So these protests, at least maybe not in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but on the national level, are attaining there's already a casualty count, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So, yeah,
right.
That's not really a question, more so than it is a statement. But I suppose I'd like to hear your comment on it.
Yeah, so it just speaks to the culture of police brutality in Texas. There's a good old boy. I got him mentality for people who are protesting. Anyone who says, hey, you know, we deserve to be treated fairly and equally, there's no regard for your life. And Texas is a red state. And so we expect that, but we intend to change it. We intend to change the attitudes and the thoughts and the mindsets of the people that are in power. If we can't change their minds, then we're going to change them. We're going to change them out. We're going to switch them out. And that's the goal here in Texas.
With regards to the protests, what are your thoughts on how the protests have been going so far? I don't necessarily just mean in Dallas, but this has like been like a wildfire that has spread throughout the country. What do you think about how the protests have essentially happened so far? What do you think about the way they've operated within our society?
I think the protests have been phenomenal. In my opinion, the protests represent our rights, our constitutional rights to protest. I think it represents American culture when we're fed up. I believe that the protests and other nationalities joining the protests help strengthen our cause. I believe that the protests, you know, they're necessary. And I'm excited that it's grown like wildfire. And I'm excited that people have continued to push and move forward. I'm excited for the change that's going to happen that people are pushing for.
I know you wanted to touch on that a little bit, the sort of multi-ethnic, the multi-racial element of these protests. I know there's been a lot of debate about whether that's good or bad. There's people saying, oh, these Antifa kids are ruining everything. what do you make of all this debate?
So I think there really is no debate. And I made this statement on social media. And, you know, a lot of people did not agree with me, but I had a large portion of my followers that did agree with me. And that is this: no one has a monopoly on the revolution. African-Americans don't have a monopoly on revolution, revolt, or protest. Hispanics don't have a monopoly on it. Caucasians do not have a monopoly on it. And so protest is for everyone who feels uncomfortable as a citizen in the country that they're living in. And so when a group comes to join you to help you protest and you feel as though they don't belong there, I believe that, you know, there's something wrong there. And I think that there's something wrong with the individual. Right. Because if you see that I'm in distress and you come to help me and I reject your assistance, that just doesn't make sense. And it's the same thing. It's the same mindset of a protester who would say, hey, I don't like these other groups that are joining us to push our cause and to move our cause forward. Here's another thing. It is a fact that sentencing guidelines for African-Americans versus Caucasians are more stringent. So the fact that Caucasians are out there and they're helping us protest, that's awesome. That's wonderful. I'm saying that because your sentencing guidelines are less stringent, then why wouldn't I want you out there? The police are not going to brutalize you like they would brutalize me. I'm an African-American woman. You'll get brutalized, but they won't brutalize you like they would brutalize me. And so I welcome the groups. I welcome anyone who is there to, you know, push the positive cause, push the envelope for change. And I think that, you know, everyone should do that. And I talk to my followers about that all the time. You know, everyone should be in here pushing and all hands on deck. And I'm appreciative of that. I think everybody should be.
I mean, I have to be honest on my end. I feel like a lot of this talk of, oh, good protester, bad protester. I think the early talk in Minneapolis of, oh, these are outside agitators. All of this seems to be being done to delegitimize the protests. This whole attempt to sort of create these narratives seems to be a way to just divide and conquer what is becoming a movement across the land.
Absolutely. And can you name one protest or revolutionary act that happened in American history that did not include vandalism, fire, looting? Those are the basic premises of change. And so what are we really arguing here? Are we saying that, we should do a Martin Luther King peaceful march, you know, that we've been doing for the last 80 years and, which has no effect and no disrespect to Martin Luther King at all? But are we saying that, or, you know, are we denying the fact that that this protest has been effective already? You've had governors of states stand up and say, hey, We need a thorough investigation. We have the Texas governor come out today, Greg Abbott, and he said, you know, Greg, he said Derek Chauvin should have been arrested quicker than he was arrested. We had an entire city council meeting earlier today that went on Facebook Live where, all of the people in position were basically they were denouncing the actions of Derek Chauvin. And so that is because of this heightened protest. So I don't think you can put a protest in a box and say, hey, this is how it's supposed to go. I think you move with the feelings and the energy of the people. And that's what has been that's what's been happening.
I just wanted to add to that, you know, I too have a great deal of respect for Martin Luther King, but I'm sort of put off by all the people saying Martin Luther King would be so ashamed of this. All these white people keep saying this to me. And I just think to myself, first off, name one other civil rights leader other than Martin Luther King. And they never can name one. It's almost like they don't think the Black Panthers existed. They don't think Malcolm X existed. It was just Martin Luther King. And not only that, but they forget what Martin Luther King said. He said, rioting is the language of the unheard. But apparently they don't know that. And I find it, you know, really despicable how people, I think, in a lot of ways, misrepresent King.
I mean these people also never read Letter from Birmingham Jail, let's be honest.
Right. So when we talk about Martin Luther King, that's a very sensitive topic for a lot of people. But, people who have the wrong intentions like to use Martin Luther King as a, hey, this is the way you should be, because he was nonviolent. Nonviolence is convenience for the person that's violent, you know, because he'd like to march and protest and he wouldn't fight back. So that's the type of person they want, you know, the average African-American to be. They don't want equal force. They don't want you, you know, speaking out against your rights unless it's in a peaceful fashion. They want us to be almost emotionless. And it's not fair. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry, when people say that, I just always think they're racist. When you are a white person or a Caucasian individual and you throw Martin Luther King up in my face, I almost get sick. Because at the end of his life, before his assassination, at least a month before, he said that he even regretted integration. So he felt like he should have, strengthened our base by saying, hey, start your own businesses, start your own financial companies. And so I'm saying that Martin Luther King, he regretted a couple of things that he did. And I'm not saying that I am against integration. I'm saying that he realized that he made some mistakes. And so I believe that, protesting and getting abused at the lunch counter, I think those are mistakes. The reason why I say that is because now this generation looks at those actions, you know, the Caucasian generation, and they say, oh, that's the way you're supposed to do it. You're supposed to let us do this to you, inflict this damage upon you, and you're just supposed to take it. And that's a mistake. And so we have to move forward. We have to appreciate what has been done for us in the past, but we don't have to live there. We don't have to live in that space. We can move forward.
I agree 110% with that. And I think, like I said, you can't have, you need MLK on the one end, and then you need the Black Panthers and the Malcolm X's on the other hand during the civil rights movement. I think that's what made it so successful. And I think when Caucasians ignore that, I think that's an issue. And I do find something very insincere about it. In regards to these protests, one story that came out, I believe it was yesterday, was actually in the Dallas area. There was a machete-wielding or sword-wielding madman who was charging protesters. What's the story on that?
Yeah, so this story kind of caught my attention because, you know, when the media, put this story out, you know, I just saw a guy being chased down by protesters and being kicked in the middle of, you know, a business complex. And then I saw him laying motionless. There was blood on the ground, of course. And I saw a couple of protesters trying to assist him. So I went and I did a little research on the story. I found the original video And here this guy is, he's standing across the street. And then he begins to chase protesters with a machete. They're running away from him, running for their lives. And then they turn around and they finally, you know, they finally circle him in and they begin to pummel him. And so that's the story. So the media comes out with the story and they say, hey, this is a business owner protecting his business. Well, after, you know, I did some research, I found out that he was not a business owner. He was simply downtown. I don't know what he was there for, obviously to wreak havoc. And that's what he did. And so the media likes to take stories like this and they put them at the front. They put them at the forefront, you know, of every major outlet. And they say, hey, this is what's happening. You know, stop the protesting. You know, a business owner was almost beat to death. And that's not the true story. So it's important that we talk about these things and we get the correct story out. This guy was not a business owner. He was downtown watching the protest and he decided to chase after protesters with his machete.
That's an utterly surreal video. Just this man running at these protesters with a machete. And then, you know, thank God, you know, he got beat down. And right. I have no sympathy for him. But I'm amazed by the people coming out and saying, oh, he was protecting his neighborhood. No, he wasn't. He's running around with a machete. He's a madman.
Right, right.
The same excuse was made for the two people that killed Ahmed Arbery, I believe, that the community had deferred to them for some kind of, like, defense project, you know? Like, this is a common characteristic of these kind of events.
Yeah, just preposterous, you know? They hide behind neighborhood watch. They hide behind protecting their property. They hide behind, protecting their rights. They hide behind anything they can hide behind to wield a gun and to take someone's life. And that has to stop. With this protest, I believe more people are going to be exposed. The attitude of racist individuals like that are going to be exposed. And, you know, it'll be up to the people to decide, you know, what to do next. And, I always say, even when I speak at rallies, all power to the people, all power is in the hands of the people.
I guess in that regard, and I've talked to other people about this, like Barrett Brown, a mutual friend of ours. Do you think that we're past the point where, you know, maybe some people just need to be educated a little bit more. Maybe we're at the point, and it seems like this at times, that, you know what side you're on. You're either on the side of the people who are fighting for some type of justice, or, you know, you're for the status quo. And I'm beginning to think that's where we're at, and the people trying to say, oh, all lives matter and all this stuff, for the vast majority of them, this is about maintaining the status quo rather than having a good faith debate.
You know, I just don't know. I just honestly don't know what they would need to be educated on. I mean, so, you know, because it's been 400 years. I'm frustrated. What do these people need to be educated on? Did they not see the fight for integration? Did they not see? Did they not see the prison industrial complex? Did they not see the crime bill signed into law where, you know, African Americans were sentenced harshly? Did they not see the hangings? I have people send me old postcards of, you know, black people hanging from trees for stealing out of the store. Like, and this was a part of American culture. Like, what do these people need to be educated on?
I was just going to add really quickly, not to interrupt you, but I see people saying, oh, they're burning down the cities, these protesters. And I'm like, well, what about Tulsa, Oklahoma? When Black Wall Street, Black Wall Street.
No one from the community is owning the Target itself that's being looted, you know?
Right, right. And then the CEO of Target comes out and he released a statement. He said, I understand. He said, I understand, the anger and the disgust. He said, I am with you guys. He basically said the Target will be rebuilt, but we need to work on the structure of American society and American law. The CEO of Target doesn't even care about the store being looted. But here we are talking about, you know, the communities look horrible. Oh, my God, the business owners. When we know that a lot of the business owners have business insurance. And, you know, the other thing is here is this, you know, my life is worth more than property. George Floyd's life was worth more than property. And so we have to weigh the hearts of these people that are saying they don't understand and they need to be educated. And I don't buy it. Because you know what? I don't have to be in your shoes to see that you're in pain. I don't have to be in your shoes to empathize with you. You know, if someone is, you know, gets hurt, you know, in a car accident in front of me, I'm that person that jumps out the car and I'm, are you okay? And our hearts should just be like that. You know, that's just the way our hearts should be. And I just think some people that, you know, they don't want to be. This is classism. It's classism. It's, you know, you thinking that you're better than someone else and you wanting to be, you know, the higher class. And that can't work. That has to be all of that. That entire structure has to be dismantled. It has to be dismantled and rebuilt by the people.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. I just keep saying to people whenever they say, this building got burned down. Someone mentioned to me that a historic black church was burned down in D.C. And I said, well, I don't know who caused that. I don't know why that happened. You know, these protests are pretty intense, and I'm not sure they're always like super controlled. You know, that's why these protests have made so much.
On the flip side of buildings that have burnt down that are probably very good, I'm pretty sure the Union of the Daughters of the Confederacy building in Richmond burned down, taking with it Stonewall Jackson's flag. So
yeah, but
like some good has come from it.
The point I'm making is, you know, I can't understand why every single building burned down. There's so many different people involved in these protests. But the thing is, at bottom line, you can say all you want, oh, this building burned down, and I'm just going to respond, a man was murdered by a cop, and why does this keep happening? That needs to be the issue. If you're mad about these protests, and you're mad about buildings burning, stop having cops killing people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Address the issue. So we look at this whole scenario of the rioting, the protesting, and the looting that comes along with it, the burning of buildings, vandalism, and all it took was the arrest of every officer on the scene, and this would not have happened. And America still has not fulfilled its duties in arresting all of the officers that were on the scene, and that's why this has to move forward. They are so afraid of doing the right thing that they continue to do the wrong thing. And this is where we are.
I mean, on the topic of the wrong thing, I'm reminded of several instances of police kneeling down in solidarity with protesters, only 2 moments later deploy tear gas. So
Yeah. That's the thing. And, you know, I address that as well on my social media. So because an officer kneels with you, you think that he's going to stop brutalizing you. He will kneel with you today and brutalize you in 15 minutes. And that's exactly what's happening. That's exactly what's happening. You have protesters walking up to officers asking for hugs. You know, this is totally out of place. This is not what protest and revolution is about. And so we have a situation where African Americans have been taught, you know, they've been taught to be docile and submissive and subservient. And that's just the truth. And we don't want war. We don't want to fight. We just want to, you know, get along with everybody, as Rodney King says. And it's time out for that. It's time out for that attitude. So when other groups come along to help, we have this attitude of, oh, my God, look what they're doing. It's not us. We didn't do it. Look at them. So we have this attitude of, sorry, snitching. We're going to snitch on the organizations that are or the people that are attempting to assist us. And I'm totally against that. You know, revolution doesn't include one race. It's an entire country. It's an entire people. And that's what we have to understand.
Yeah, like reporting on your fellow revolutionaries, like that kind of activity just breeds mistrust. It stands in opposition to the long-term goals.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What is your take on where these protests go from here? Because I know there's a lot of concern over, you know, Trump's repeated threats to involve the military.
Right.
What do you make of that? Do you think it's just bluffing? How do you think this should be responded to?
So I think Trump is a provocateur. I believe that he is a bully. I believe that he is disrespectful. And I believe that the protests should continue and we should move forward regardless. And I believe that's what's happening outside of Washington, D.C. Just a couple of hours ago, Washington, D.C., they put up a fence, a 10-foot tall fence. And the protesters, you know, they're still protesting at the fence. And so I think we need to continue to move forward and not be deterred by any threats from a president who has disrespected everyone, who has disrespected countries and nations, who has blatantly saturated the United States with his racism and has caused this upheaval. You know, he is the reason for a lot of the brutality that has happened within the last 4 years. And I believe that the method should be we protest all the way up to election. We protest and we continue to protest and we get them out of there and we get new laws and new rules in place.
I mean, there's a lot of messages being sent. I was unaware of it before seeing it on your Twitter feed, but there's this truck driver who almost hit these protesters over the weekend. And he's been released from jail already. Maybe you could tell my listeners about that, because I was just scrolling over your Twitter page and I didn't even realize that it happened. I can't even keep up.
Yeah. So this truck driver who works for a company that supported Trump in the 2016 election, this company actually donated $400,000 to the Trump campaign. This truck driver rolls through a highway that has been basically cut off because protesters are on the bridge. He barrels through. The protesters run screaming, you know, and somehow his truck comes to a stop, you know, and the protesters jump up in the truck and they pull him out of the truck. They take his phone away from him. The cops hurry and they run to this guy's defense to save him. And so these Black Lives Matter protesters, they put this guy's text messages all over Twitter this is a pre-planned attack. He's made arrangements for his wife to be taken care of. He sent a text and said, hey, I'm on my way. I'm about to roll them over. He is arrested. He is detained for 48 hours. I believe that was the longest that they could hold him. And they didn't charge him within the 48-hour period. They said they're still coming up with charges. So he was released a couple of hours ago. And this speaks to what, you know, it speaks to the value of American lives, the value of Black lives. This guy blatantly ran through a group of protesters of every nationality. And the police have evidence that he pre-planned this attack, but yet he is released 48 hours later with no charges. And we're supposed to trust the American government.
Casey, do you want to add to that at all? I mean, it seems like, I assume you're shocked.
No, I mean, shocked wouldn't exactly be the right word. Is it a no, I'm not even disappointed. I'm beyond just an empty rage. Just an empty rage. That's all I have left now.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I identify with that totally. It almost leaves you feeling helpless. Like, you know, I feel like they're leaving us no other choice. You know, it feels like our hand is being forced. And so because this guy, he can get out and do it again. And then you look at the example that you set when you let a terrorist, because that's what he is. He was terrorizing people. When you let a terrorist, you release him back into society without punishment. So you've set an example because you've allowed other terrorists to see, hey, it's possible that I can get away with this. Not only that, there was a GoFundMe account set up for him within 2 hours after his arrest. When I found out about the GoFundMe account, they'd already raised $17,000+. I immediately put it on my social media and we shut it down. It was 4 or 5 accounts. We shut them all down. We have to, and I told my followers, you have to defund terrorism. You cannot allow this to happen. Any GoFundMe that is set, there was a GoFundMe set up for Derek Chauvin, the officer that murdered George Floyd. We shut those, it was 2. We shut those down within 30 minutes. So people are outraged. People that can't get out there and protest, they're protesting from their cell phones by shutting accounts down and by reporting people who are constantly putting up messages of hate. And so I always tell people there's more than one way to fight oppression. You don't have to be out there on the streets. You can fight it from your phone. And it's been happening. People have been doing that.
Before you go, Tiffany, I just want to make a little bit of a statement here. Based on my personal experiences, police brutality in Pittsburgh has become more and more of an issue over the years. Incidents have increased. I have seen some things in Pittsburgh with the cops that have very much upset me and left a sort of mark on me. And I'm really tired of the way certain white people just don't want to take this seriously. And they'll say things like, you know, when Antoine Rose was murdered by a cop here, this kid, I mean, he ran. And he probably should have ran because he was black. And apparently if you're black and you're a kid, you're going to get shot by a cop.
Right.
They won't ask questions. And there were protests after that happened. And they were peaceful protests. And all people could say in this city was, they're blocking the roads. They're blocking the roads. That's an inconvenience for me. And then when something like Ferguson would happen, they would complain about rioting. And I said to these, a lot of people in my community, I said, what do you want? Because if people peacefully protest, you get mad. If they violently protest, you get mad. If they don't do anything, nothing changes. What do you want? And no one has ever given me an adequate answer to that. And that's because I don't think they want things to change. And it's very upsetting.
It is. I couldn't agree with you more. Change comes from the heart. And change happens through protest. Change happens through revolt. And, you know, to be inconvenienced because a road is cut off, you know, it's very selfish when you weigh that with someone losing their life, someone being murdered. And so, you know, it just speaks to the heart of people. We have, you know, the people that are out there protesting and that are pushing for change. Those are the people with the good hearts. Those are the people that are looking forward to a brighter America for their children and their grandchildren. Those people are the reasons why, African Americans will be able to walk around one day without being brutalized. And so I'm going to appreciate them right now with every ounce of my being, because, you know, I live and breathe, you know, change and equality. And it's important to me. It's extremely important to me. And I would just wish it were important for everyone as a whole.
In closing, it sounds like you do have a lot of hope for that change to happen. I know some people have become pessimistic over the years. And if, you know, written things about nothing will ever change. This is just sort of the way things are. This is what America is. Why do you maintain a hope that this can change? And what would you say to the people that think that this is just the way business will be done forever?
Great question. I maintain the hope because I know for a fact that I was created equal. And I know for a fact that I exist and I am equal. And there's no way that I would be here to live a life of inequality just forever. There's no way. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make common sense. And so if, you know, while I'm here and things are unequal, I'm going to fight for that equality. right? I'm going to fight for it because I know that it's there and I know that it's mine. I know that it's ours. And what I say to people who, you know, don't believe that it will ever happen, you know, those are the people that'll be on the, you know, they're the armchair quarterbacks. They'll be on the sideline, pretty soon trying to direct plays and tell people how to run the ball. And that's, you know, those are the people, they won't go down in history. They won't have a historical context, you know, and so we don't do this so that we'll go down in history. We do that because we want to make a better, you know, a better place for our children to exist. And that is why I fight. And that's why I continue to have hope.
Well, I'd like to echo those sentiments. I think we're doing a good job of tearing down the Confederate monuments. Maybe we'll be able to get statues of people like Dr. Cornel West, the people that deserve to be remembered. If you could, how can my listeners follow your activism and your work?
Absolutely. So I am on Instagram as Tiffany Billions. That's T-I-F-F-N-E-Y, Billions as in money, B-I-L-L-I-O-N-S. I am on Facebook as Tiffany Lee Billions, Lee with two E's. And I am on Twitter at Billions TV 2, Billions TV the number 2.
And Casey, do you want to lead us out?
Stay safe, stay strong, solidarity forever, comrades.
Solidarity.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Tiffany Billions. Please be sure to keep up with her work on social media and let me know what you thought about our conversation by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at ParallaxViewsPod@ProtonMill.com. Also, if you can, please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. Lots of extra goodies up for those of you that support me financially. You are the folks that make this show possible. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views to Parallax Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxieties, problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight. With no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.